with me is Omar Meher, if I say it right, sorry. He's a machine learning expert with over a decade of experience in analytics and artificial intelligence. And he's currently the practice lead for machine learning at ESRI.
Yep.
And I'm sure everybody in this room know the company ESRI, so I probably don't need to explain that. A global GIS provider, leading industry in this field. And Omar had co-founded two startups in machine learning, and also worked on several multinational companies on this analytics area. And recently, he's been working on a variety of government entities to look at ways to utilize artificial intelligence for high-resolution land cover, smart digitization of roads, automating neighborhood stabilization process, and road accidents prediction. So with that, we're going to let Omar lead us to GeoAI, Machine Learning Meets GIS.
Thank you, Indy. Thank you so much. Hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to be with you today. And I was really excited since the first moment that David told me about this workshop. Just a quick question. How many have practiced machine learning or deep learning before? Nice. I think we're talking 20, 25% of the audience. How many have used Jupyter Notebooks for analysis? Interesting. It's very hard to find someone who is practicing machine learning without using Jupyter Notebooks, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. So, yeah, again, my name is Omar. I'm leading the AI machine learning practice at ESRI. How many knows ESRI? Awesome. And I just joined like since 8 months. I'm still new. I'm coming from Dubai. I worked for the ESRI office at Dubai for about 1.3 months. Anyone have been to Dubai before? It's a very interesting city. They have a minister for AI right now. Do you guys know about that? And they have a driverless metro. They are prototyping with autonomous self-driving helicopter taxis, super and stuff. I'm not sure if I would try this, actually. I would stick to the traditional taxi, at least for the next 5 years. And I'm originally from Egypt, so the land of the pharaohs. Anyone have been to Egypt before? Nice. Awesome. So it all started like 1.5 years ago when I had this chat with one of our directors about the potential of doing AI with what we're doing at ESRI. ASRI has been there since like 49 years. We have existing machine learning tools. We're going to discuss that today. But if you think about it, there has been a rise in AI lately, specifically in the last 4 to 5 years, thanks to multiple factors. And I thought it just makes sense to get the massive progress that's happening on AI level to marry to what we're doing at ASRI. Because if you think about it, there is an explosion happening in location data today, right? We're talking at least 30 billion sensors by 2020. All sending sensor data, every single data output from that has a location tag, right? Everyone is using maps, whether to find the nearest restaurant, whether to check in, whether to share a location with a friend on WhatsApp, whether to drive, like I was using the Google Maps today to come here. It was a bit tricky, but I finally arrived. So mapping is not anymore for niche departments in corporates or governments. It's literally for everyone. And there is an explosion happening in location data. And as we're going to see today, there is a ton of progress happening on multiple fronts in AI. I bet you have explored some of these, whether on your Facebook profile or Instagram or something else. So on the top left, actually, this is AlphaGo. It's an algorithm developed by Google DeepMind, and it has beaten the world top contender at this game. And it's using a technique called reinforcement learning for that. So they can go out and load the videos. Okay. And that happened actually in 2016. I just want to give a brief overview about what's happening in the AI world today and gradually introduce you to what we're doing to get this to work with location. So this is a very complex game. It's called Go game, and from my humble knowledge about this this game. It's very popular in Asian cultures, like China, I think. And people who show some talent in this game, they got trained in it since they are kids until university, I think. And it's a 19 by 19 board. It's very hard to attack from a brute force technique. The total possible configurations of this game is more than the numbers of atoms in the whole universe. Can you imagine that? So it's crazy. It's not going to work to design a rule-based engine to figure out this game. So Google developed this algorithm called AlphaGo that has beaten the world top contender here using a technique called reinforcement learning, which is basically around getting the machine to learn from multiple trials, millions or billions of trials against itself. I'm trying to get this video working again. Let me do another try. Maybe I need to switch to Mac. Many friends advise me to do so. No offense for those who are not using it. I was an old Mac user actually back in the startup days, but. So this is an algorithm developed by OpenAI, which is an AI company. It's a foundation organization, actually, that is backed by Elon Musk. They have developed an algorithm that has developed one of the top contenders in a game called, it's a very popular game, actually. And every year they have like thousands of contenders in that kind of stadium. They're trying to compete against themselves. There is a ton of application happening today in AI. It's used in self-driving cars. Cancer diagnosis, crime prediction, personalized marketing, stock market prediction, different kind of robots, advanced video analytics, chatbots, you name it. So this is basically through due to multiple factors. The first factor is the explosion of data. There is a ton of data today that weren't available before. We have social media data, we have telecom data, we have massive sensor data growing at exponential rates. The second factor is the computation power. There's a type of machine learning called deep learning, we're gonna explain it right now, that is working, performing very well on GPUs. There is very good advancement happening right now on GPUs, and hence the performance of deep learning is really good. The third factor is new algorithms coming out, specifically deep learning algorithms. So traditional machine learning algorithms has been there since ages. Now recurrent neural networks, convolutional neural networks, reinforcement learning, these algorithms, some versions of it are coming very powerfully these days. So these three factors are coming up. So this is what's happening today. We have tons of applications, but what about location AI? What if we want to predict accidents probability per segment per hour, as we have done in Utah, to come up with some sort of a way to direct passengers to take the safest route? What if we want to predict the actual arrival times of vehicles based on multiple factors like the driver behavior, the kind of vehicle, the kind of product, the difference between summer and winter, the difference between times of day, lots of factors. We have different routes engines right now, but what if we want to predict in some point in the future? What if we want to automatically detect unregistered roads? Like, this is a very common problem, the road network layer. Every day there are new roads, especially in the desert. Lots of oil companies and gas companies and transportation companies want to figure out those new roads. We are using unsupervised machine learning with GPS traces to detect that. What if we want to detect objects from satellite imagery and use spatial analysis to find where is the nearest missile launcher in proximity to airports, for example, or do very high resolution line classification, like 1 meter, not 20 meter, not 5 meter, like 1 meter line classification using deep learning. Or if we want to detect objects dynamically from video feeds, and as we have done in DC, from 111 video cameras, count the number of cars, bicycles, pedestrians, you name it, and find on the map really quickly what are the patterns where everyone is moving and find abnormal behaviors. Now, this kind of applications is not tapped yet. The kind of progress that's happening today in AI is really mostly in the computer vision. You're gonna find tons of applications recognizing objects. In the area of text analytics, tons of applications by Microsoft, IBM, Google, Watson, you name it, to understand text, classify documents, etc. Cancer diagnosis, self-driving cars, you're not gonna find so many people predicting accidents or predicting ETAs or understanding, extracting intelligence from satellite imagery. This is a challenge, and it's an amazing opportunity for you guys, and it's an amazing opportunity for us to step in and start bringing those two domains together, and that's what we're trying to do at ESRI. My unit, or my team, is trying to find out those use cases, work closely with different organizations and develop those solutions and discover what is the connection between the advancement happening in deep learning and AI and the world of GIS. And it just makes sense to happen, right? I mean, everything is happening in a place. We have been doing spatial analysis to understand what's been happening, understand phenomena, try to see what kind of actions we want to do. But what about let the machine traverse all of these data sources coming everywhere, try to find the very complex deep patterns that it's no way humans can find, and predict spatiotemporal events with high accuracy, or cluster data to find interesting patterns, or find interesting stuff from videos, sensors, imagery, and do spatial analysis on top of that, right? As you can see, there is a ton of application here. So what I want to do today is to really, I call what we're doing inside ESRI is starting a movement, right? It's not just working on some cool projects that I'm going to show today. It's literally about starting a movement of getting the top-notch AI to work hand-in-hand with GIS to solve problems. And the most qualified people to do so are the ones who have deep background in spatial. Because as we're going to see, it's not easy to do. I mean, to do this kind of stuff, to predict road accidents, we need to prepare the training data, and we need to do lots of geoprocessing to extract for every single accident the degree of road curvature, the proximity to intersections, do interpolation for the weather fields. If someone doesn't have the needed GIS background, they're not going to be able to do so, right? So I just want to jump directly to that. And before jumping to the examples, I want to have like a high level overview of what's AI, what's machine learning, what's deep learning, demystify these kind of terms, and then jump directly to what we're doing. So artificial intelligence is the paradigm of getting computers to be as smart as humans. This is the whole idea. And it's not new. It's been there since the 50s. I think the term was first coined like in the 50s or something like that. And there are lots of categories under AI. There is reasoning, knowledge representation, perception, natural language processing, robotics, and one category of those is machine learning. Machine learning is the idea of trying to extract rules from data instead of being explicitly programmed, right? So if you think about most of the software that we're currently using, including ArcGIS, by the way, I would say like 99% of it, they are rule-based engines, right? So you click on a button, you do specific geoprocessing tasks based on some rules that the programmer has defined before. But the paradigm of machine learning is that, hey, let's give the data to the machine, let's get the machine to figure out the rules, the patterns, etc., and in some cases predict what's gonna happen. This is called supervised learning. Or find interesting patterns, this is called unsupervised learning. Or help us optimize the actions by figuring out the best reward, like reinforcement learning. And deep learning is a specific machine learning technique using deep neural networks that is mimicking the human brain. It's trying to follow a very similar structure to our brains. Our neurons are connected to each other through synapses. This is the same idea here. It's different layers of neurons connected to each other, trying to predict some sort of outcome or classify some sort of outcome based on some input parameters. And deep comes from the idea that this is the traditional shape of a neural network. Input layer, hidden layer, output layer. And whenever we have more than one input layer, this is called deep. So it's generally good with high dimensional data like voice, images, and text. They can detect objects with really high accuracy, in some cases outperforming humans. And this, I would say, is one of the main reasons of the hype around AI lately in the area of computer vision. I mean, it's literally everywhere. The self-driving car needs to figure out the pedestrians in real time, the road signs, etc. This is in most cases using deep learning convolutional neural networks. Anyone has played with CNN's convolutional neural networks? Nice. So it can detect objects from imagery, it can detect with high accuracy text from documents, objects from videos. It has different applications. It's generally outperforming traditional machine learning in two things. First, it doesn't need a human to identify the features. Super high level. If we want to predict whether that object is orange or apple, we need to give the machine some data. We call this a training data. We give it some features and some labels. So we'll give it features like the weight and texture of different objects and what is that object. After a while, it's gonna be trained whenever it sees new outcome to predict whether this is orange or apple. Now we have explicitly identified that these are features. In deep learning, we don't really need to do that. We just give the machine tons of images, like 100,000 images for dogs, others for cats, we don't really need to explicitly identify that these are ears, these are nose, these are eyes, etc. It's able to understand through hierarchical representation of knowledge those features without human intervention, and it just needs the label to classify or predict. So you can think of it that way. AI is the big umbrella, machine learning is a subfield of AI, deep learning is a specific machine learning technique. And maybe you ask yourself, what does this have to do with Geo? Do we have machine learning tools in ArcGIS, for example, in FTSRI? And the answer is yes, we have machine learning tools, and we have been doing that since years. It's not new for us. And my question, maybe have any of the audience played with the machine learning tools in ArcGIS before? Oh, so how many of you have heard that there are machine learning tools in ArcGIS anyways? Interesting. I usually find this answer, although these tools are here since years. Maybe they were called machine learning. Machine learning is suddenly cool again. But we have tools that help you predict events, or cluster data to find interesting patterns, or classify images. And these are samples of those tools. So for the prediction, we have geographically weighted regression. We have ordinary least squares. We have empirical Bayesian gradient. These are tools that take some input and produces some output, predicts some output. For example, we have used geographically weighted regression, as we're going to see, to predict the local temperature across the whole US from global climate data. We have clustering tools like the spatially constrained multivariate clustering, the density-based clustering, the space-time cube, etc. And you have different tools for classification, like support vector machines or random trees. Like, this is an example where we are using geographically weighted regression. It's a tool in ArcGIS. From global climate data, we have trained the geographically weighted regression to predict the accurate local temperature with accuracy up to 90%. So this is the output using the GWR. And there was like 19 different variables from global climate data. And we have used that to train the model to predict the local temperature. And we have different other tools like aerial interpolation, EBK regression, etc. Anyone has played with geographically weighted regression before? Okay, interesting. So here we go. So that wasn't called machine learning before. And to be honest, machine learning is not totally new. It's stemming from the statistical analysis, statistical modeling domain, right? So it's basically, in the case of supervised learning, we're trying to model an input-output relationship. And this has been existing for years. Maybe the new part right now is the deep learning component. But the modeling part is not that new. We have clustering algorithms as well. Let me show you an example. So this is Waze. Okay. So this is Waze data for people reporting traffic, high traffic around the city of LA. And as you can see, it's literally everywhere, right? And maybe if you look at the data at its raw format, it's not that easy to understand any patterns, right? And this is a very good use case for clustering. So usually we don't really jump to supervised learning or predictions before we understand the data. And to understand geographical data, there are different clustering techniques like density-based clustering. So density-based clustering is an interesting clustering algorithm that we have today in ArcGIS that you can use to find statistically significant spatial clusters in spatial data like that. We want to answer a question. Where are the areas that there are statistically significant clusters or statistically significant events versus noise? Where are the areas that we are most probably anticipating traffic to happen around LA versus others that are just random noise? So if we want to have a look at the results of the density-based clustering, we just run the tool and here we go. These are the interesting clusters that are, have different colors. And other than that, those gray points are not considered statistically significant. Now, the tool has some options to enable you to optimize the sensitivity of the model or decide how many points you want to have per cluster as a maximum or a minimum. But generally speaking, you could just run the out-of-the-box BBScan or HDBScan or optics. You come three different versions to quickly understand where are signal versus noise. So that's one example of that. And we have different other techniques for clustering. Now, at the same time, we integrate with machine learning and deep learning frameworks as well. So you have most probably heard about TensorFlow, which is the deep learning framework by Google, or IBM Watson, or scikit-learn of Python, or PyTorch, you name it. So we don't want to reinvent the wheel, really. So we're not gonna invent new machine learning frameworks. We are working on some spatial machine learning algorithms today as part of our core machine learning offerings, but we want to integrate with the industry top-notch framework as well. So we do this integration by two pieces. First is the Python API. If you are using Jupyter Notebooks, that's one piece that I really recommend you to play with. Just go Google Python API RGS. You're gonna find tons of examples of using Python in a notebook server or Jupyter Notebooks to call different RGS functions. And usually most of the machine learning work these days happens in notebooks, whether it's Jupyter Notebooks or R notebooks or other kind of notebooks. A notebook is an experience where you type code, see the results, etc. So it's a very good environment for experimentation. And I want to show you different examples of those integration pieces, right? But before doing that, I just want to have a very quick introduction to how supervised learning works. Supervised learning is the form of machine learning that helps us to do prediction. So machine learning in general can help us do multiple things. On the top of it, I would say prediction. We want to predict some event. We want to predict fraud or crime or accidents or bombings, you name it. Or anomaly detection. There are different algorithms that help us understand anomalies. For example, in the case of fraud detection, we don't have a ton of historical fraud incidents that we can teach a machine. But we have all the records that were in fraud. So we can teach the machine to understand where is the normal behavior versus the abnormal behavior. Detecting objects or features, extracting features from imagery or videos is another application. And generally, automation is another thing, as we're going to see. It helps automate lots of tasks. So how does prediction happen? For prediction to happen, we need to train an algorithm. And to do this kind of training, we need something called a label data set. So think of it that way. Let's say we want to predict churn. Like we want to predict when Omar is going to leave Verizon and go to AT&T, for example. This is called churn. So we go to Verizon, tell them, hey guys, give us all your historical data for all the customers for the last 2 years. And we want for every customer to know whether he or she churned or not. This is called the label or the output. This is what we want to predict for future customers. And we want to know the customer's features or variables. So we want to know for the last week or the last month before churning, the number of call drops, the number of complaints, the subscribe package, the call rate decline, etc. The different variables that would generally we think might be affecting whether a customer would churn or not. We generally feed the machine with lots of variables, and there are different processes in machine learning called feature engineering to wisely select those features. So what is done is basically, this is called a training data set, and we start educating or applying some machine learning algorithms. These are basically models. Those of you who are familiar with statistical modeling, again, it's not new. Like different regression techniques, logistic regression, linear regression, support vector machines, random forests, neural networks in some cases, deep learning, you name it. But the output of that, we want to have a trained model or trained models, a group of models or one model that is really optimized to see new data for new customers, to see the features and predict the output that we want to predict. Here, it's predicting probability, for example. That this customer is going to churn by probability of 75%. It can predict probability or it can predict a number, right? So this is in a nutshell the idea of training and having a training data set. And if you follow the same lines, we can do predictions in different contexts if you have different training sets. If you want to predict road accidents, we need to have historical accident data. This is the output. And for every accident, we want to know the weather state, the proximity to intersections, the number of lanes, the hour of the day. If you want to predict water leakages, and this is something that we have done, we want the historical pipe breaks data together with the temperature, pressure, depth, age of the pipe, you name it. If you want to predict retail sales, we want to have for every store, for Nike, for example, the historical sales per store, plus the number of competitors around, the percentage of specific tapestry segments, the food and beverage sales at this area, different demographical variables at this area, etc. And this is how we train a machine. So let's start having some examples of applying AI or machine learning with GIS. And the first one maybe I want to start is accidents prediction. So how many of you use Google Maps for reaching to specific destinations? Okay. Have you thought about the possibility of having an option in Google Maps that not only tells you how much time you could reach, but what is the safest route? This could be really interesting, right? I mean, it gives you the option to take multiple routes. It gives you the default route, which is the shortest one. But you can still select other routes, right? They are marked in gray. What if there is an option to just tell you, hey, do you want a probability of accidents like 90% or 50% or 30%? You guys are laughing, right? This could be really, I mean, I'm just thinking about my wife, for example. My wife has just started learning to drive very recent, right? And honestly, I was a bit worried about her and very concerned when she's very new to the US and started to drive here with lots of new rules versus Dubai, etc. And if there was an option to let her always take the safest routes, I would definitely have done that. But if you think about it, to do that, we need to predict the probability of accidents on every single road segment in California or South California, for example, right? And how can we do this? Before doing that, we ask ourselves, what could be the factors that could lead to accidents in the first place? Are they weather factors, for example, like temperature, wind speed, raining, foggy, cloudy, humidity, or more of time factors like rush hour or time of the day or day of the week, or maybe some spatial factors like the road orientation or the solar azimuth or the sun direction or the proximity to intersections or maybe proximity to billboards. Maybe people are distracted by billboards, right? We are talking about tens of variables and really large data set that we are trying to analyze here. We're talking about Utah's accidents data for the last 7 years, 400,000 accidents, 500,000 road segments. I would say it's nearly impossible for any human to manually analyze this data and try to extract the rules that would generally lead to accidents per hour, per road segment across Utah. But maybe machine learning has a shot. And that was the motivation for us to start this project. So where did we start? We started here in ArcGIS Pro. How many of you have used ArcGIS Pro before? Interesting. I don't think we need to sell anything today, right? I just joined Esri like less than 2 years ago. I'm not old in Esri. And I always had the perception before joining the GIS community before that Esri would just producing maps. What's the big deal here, right? But honestly, once I joined, I started to learn the tons of pieces and functions that ASRI has been developing since 49 years. And I cannot by any means claim that I have covered more than 30% at maximum so far. And I was astonished by the amount of functions that we can use to make our life really easier for this kind of machine learning work. So here in that example, we grabbed different data sources. We grabbed the whole accidents data for Utah for the last 7 years. Again, I mean, you can literally see them everywhere here, right? We got the center points, center lines, different road network layers for the major roads, for the minor roads. We joined those together. We spatially joined every single accident to see on a specific road so that we can infer some spatial features. We got the average daily traffic. We got the road intersections. This is the intersections data set. The red ones are the signalized intersections. The yellow ones are not. We got weather feeds for the last 7 years from 27 weather stations. And we started calculating some spatial features. So we started looking at the data and exploring where accidents happen. And we thought, and we've seen, as you can see here, that lots of accidents are happening near intersections, right? So we added proximity to intersections as a feature to our model. Remember the idea of training, we need input features and output labels. So that was one feature. We have found many accidents happening on curvy roads. So we added the degree of road curvature or road sinuosity as a feature to our model. We added the billboards data set and added proximity to billboards as a feature. And the list goes on. We added lots of other spatial parameters like the number of lanes, the solar azimuth and the sun direction and the road orientation. And the type of road, and the number of lanes, and lots of proximity as well. And we started actually developing the training data set for that. So to do that, actually, either you can use ArcGIS Pro or you can use ArcPy. If you are familiar with Jupyter Notebooks, you can just use Python to do the same thing, right? So here in that notebook, I just want to walk you through the process. I'm not going to go in every single part of the code, don't worry. But just to give you a flavor of what ArcPy can achieve. So we use ArcPy to automate all of this without using ArcGIS Pro. We created the geodatabase. We got the data, the historical data of the accidents, the weather feeds, the collisions, the weather stations, etc. And we started actually doing some data cleansing, data processing. We renamed some fields and started extracting the spatial features of the roads, like the sinuosity, the Euclidean length, the segment length, the proximity to billboards, proximity to signals, etc. And we have added population density. Maybe that's a variable, right? Maybe lots of pedestrians are passing in condensed areas, causing some accidents, etc. We assigned the weather stations to segments based on proximity, and we spatially assigned collisions to roads. All of this through Jupyter Notebooks using ArcPy. And then actually we started loading the data from the geodatabase into Pandas data frame. So pandas are widely used for data manipulation in Python. And we started doing some operations like removing some bad data. For example, we removed those accents that are really far away from road links. So we found that some accents are not falling perfectly on road links. So we excluded anything that is more than 50 feet from that. And lots of other spatial or data processing. And after that, we started actually loading the data using the Python API to start the train. So we imported scikit-learn. And scikit-learn is a famous machine learning engine. I would really recommend it for anyone using Python. It's very handy. It has lots of the off-the-shelf machine learning algorithms. And this is the training data set. So for every accent in the last 7 years, you can find like 50 different spatial and temporal features. So the historical count on that segment, whether it's at intersection or near to intersection or not, the weather features like foggy, hailing, icy, population density, precipitation depth, proximity to signals, proximity to billboards, proximity to nearest intersection, time step, wind speed, solar azimuth, solar elevation, we have done something called one-hot encoding. So instead of adding the time, we added a variable for every hour. So we know for a fact that our 5 p.m., for example, is highly correlated with accidents. So again, who can manually analyze all of those features with 7 years worth of accidents and try to find the relations? For these kind of complex problems, we think machine learning is the way. And the list goes on. And we started the training. We are using gradient boosting, XGBoost. It's a powerful machine learning technique. Not only can give us some predictions, but it can let us know the factors behind those predictions. We split our data into training data and testing data. So usually to train a model, you need to train it on some data. This is called training data. And after it's being trained, you want to test its accuracy. So you apply that to some new data that it hasn't seen before. This is called testing, right? We split the data, we optimize some parameters like the alpha, the depth of the trees, etc. And then we started the training here. And the first output of the training is this. These are the top factors that we find are causing accidents in Utah. The first one comes as solar azimuth and solar elevation. And I don't think this is a surprise, actually. I'm literally blind at this point, right? I try to use those things and I still face a problem. I cannot see anything. Followed by temperature. Temperature not as mere temperature, but as proximity to weather in general, whether it's snowy or icy or hailing or foggy. The accents count, the visibility, the proximity to billboards, proximity to signals, not just intersections, but specifically signalized intersections. Sinuosity, wind speed, segment length, average daily traffic for sure. Weekday number 5 and 6, and hour 17, again, which is 5 p.m. This is interesting for decision. Yeah, please.
Right. Are you using the spatial relationship between the road segments at all, or are you treating each segment as an independent observation in the data set?
That's a good question. In that very exercise, we just treated every segment independently, but we've seen for other attempts for that, that they applied some sort of spatial relationships. They basically try to divide different areas at specific state based on geospatial similarity, right? So that it can inherit the spatial. So that's a very interesting point. Again, the spatial factor. So this is still work in progress. We're experimenting actually with adding some spatial context to identify the road similarity. And we are also considering to apply interpolation for weather feeds so that we can have more accurate weather feeds. Because if you think about it, maybe you have a weather station here and a road here. So the elevation would be an issue because the weather at the weather station would not be the same thing at here, right? So that was the output of the model. And then there is the prediction. So this is December 3rd at 3 p.m. It's near to rush hour and it's snowy and it's raining. And these were the predictions at the area of Woods Cross. What you're seeing here is the predicted risk per segment. The red and the orange are generally risky, the green are not. This is per hour. So for every hour, we predict the risk of those segments. And these are the accidents that actually took place at that context, at this hour. So we can see that all of them are falling on those roads we have predicted. Not only they are happening on the major and interstate roads, but some inner roads as well. Like for example, this one here, or that curvy road here. This is the South Salt Lake area near to downtown. These are the predictions. As you can see, mainly the highways and interstates, and there are some internal roads as well. And these are the actual accidents that took place. Again, you can see that many of those accidents are happening near to intersections on those points that we have predicted. Maybe proximity to intersections is a really big factor here. And that's another example from the South Valley Regional Airport. Again, at the same hour, the same day, these are the predictions. And again, it seems that road curvature plays some factor here. So this has multiple applications. We're discussing that right now with multiple cities. And you can think of it as it's healthy from annual kind of planning to understand where accidents are generally happening to fix the roads, or from operational perspective, so that you can deploy resources faster, deploy ambulance. In fact, we have another demo actually for that, but I just wanted to make it really quick today for this demo, to optimize the ambulance placement per hour based on the predicted risk per segment so that ambulance cars can reach really faster to those areas. Now I want to show you a possible application of that we are prototyping with right now. So remember our discussion about the safest route? So we have made a very quick application. It's still buggy, so I hope it doesn't crash right now. But the idea is that it's trying to consume this kind of feature service that we have developed, which is the predicted risk per segment per hour, and optimize the route based on that. So let's try to choose an origin and a destination. For example, let's place the origin here, the destination here. And it's gonna tell us that, hey, the driving time is 10 minutes with the route length of 5 miles. This is the kind of route with the maximum, this is the degree of the probability of accidents right there. And we can tell it, hey, we want a safer route, so let's optimize the probability. That's 30 minutes, 6 miles for this medium safe probability. But if it's risky, it's gonna be safe. So sometimes it's the same for some routes, but I want to show you.
So how do we read that probability? Is that 38%?
So this current number, actually, we usually optimize it. So it's from 0 to 100. So the current row score is from 0 to 40, but we usually multiply it to have some sort of a meaningful risk factor. So right now, imagine that the interval from 0 to 40 resembles from 0 to 100. So 40 is the maximum kind of potential or risk for accidents. 0 is the least. So this is a risky road having 20 minutes, and maybe if we optimize that. So it's slightly increased, like you have 21 minutes and 10 miles right now. And I hope it doesn't crash when we reduce it. So it increased, like became 27 minutes and 10 miles, and the list goes on. So these are two different, the same origin, the same destination. There is a shorter path, takes less time, but it's of higher risk. There is a slightly lengthier route with less risk. And if you want to have the least risk, actually, you're going to drive for, let's say, extra 7 minutes, but it's going to be generally safer. This is still a work in progress. We're still optimizing it. We are approaching some cities to apply it in their context. But we are seeing generally the idea of doing something that is generally hard to do with traditional analysis and trying to do it really fast per hour so that people can drive safer, right? So that was one example. And I want to show you some other examples as well. One of the things that deep learning is really powerful at right now is object detection and feature extraction, identifying objects from space. And traditionally, we have been having some tools in ArcGIS, like support vector machines and random trees, that helps you classify land, classify impervious surfaces, for example. If you have some data about roads and impervious surfaces, you can teach the algorithm to identify this at other areas. But what if you want to detect objects like those houses here? So these are called CAFO sites, concentrated animal feeding operations. They are kind of buildings that farmers tend to staff chicken, egg, chicken and pigs and other animals, very condensed. And it's causing pollution to the environment, surrounding environment. They are happening in the tens of thousands across the whole US. And we thought that if there is a way to easily detect those buildings across the whole US, instead of trying to manually search in images or sending inspectors, that would make the process more efficient, discovering those buildings, sending inspectors to it, and optimizing the whole process of trying to combat those buildings, right? So what we have done is basically the following. We trained a deep neural network, convolutional neural network, on some examples of those houses. We had a feature class of about 700 KFU sites at Kentucky. And for every site, we zoomed in, we extracted manually the image of the building, and we cropped the square around it and labeled it as KFU site. And we gave that to a deep neural network developed by TensorFlow to train it to recognize those KFU sites once it sees it in any aerial imagery. And the results were really interesting. The average accuracy was like 90% detecting any KFU site across the whole US. And we have developed a raster function to consume the model from ArcGIS Pro. So after the detection, we can convert them into vector points and apply some spatial analysis. Maybe if we have some time kind of data for the last year, we can do some sort of hotspot analysis or space-time cube to see where they are propagating, right? And I want to highlight something. That process of manually extracting the images were really tedious. It took us lots of time. We zoomed in for every object, tried to extract the image. But the good news is that we have just released that new tool. It's called Export Training Data for Deep Learning. And it takes two inputs, and it helps you prepare the training data for deep learning. It takes an input, a GIS feature class. If you have all of the locations for specific kind of buildings, for example, or cars, or ships, or, sorry, assets, and you have access to imagery, like native imagery or other kind of imagery, it will automatically go to every object, extract the image, and prepare what we call the bounded boxes, and put it in a folder so that you can feed that directly to a deep neural network. You don't really need to manually go to every object and zoom in and do this kind of cropping. It can help you do that. Now, if you want to do high resolution night classification, it can help you label the pixels as well. So for every pixel, if you have the input data of the land class, whether it's water or grass or something else, it's gonna help develop those labeled pixels to be ready for deep learning as well. So we have used both, and we have consumed this from ArcGIS Pro. As you can see here, it's detecting those buildings. And here we are browsing a new area, and it's drawing bounded boxes around those buildings when they are detected with an average accuracy of like 90%. Now, imagine the same thing trying to do it manually or trying to even do some intelligent search. Wouldn't that save lots of time, so much time right now? Object detection is, and generally applying AI to imagery and specifically satellite imagery is a very popular thing happening right now. There are lots of players playing in it, lots of companies detecting objects from space. But the question is it really just about detecting objects or it's beyond that? I personally think it's beyond that. In the case that we have here, for example, you first prepared some sort of data, you trained a deep learning model, consume that within ArcGIS Pro, and then there is some sort of action that you want to do, right? I mean, prediction or classification is just one part of intelligence. reasoning, decision making, and taking actions are equally important, right? This is the complete cycle. And our platform right now helps close this cycle. You can use the export training data for deep learning tool to prepare the data, the training data for deep learning. You can integrate using the Python API with TensorFlow or Microsoft CNTK, which are deep learning frameworks. You can consume the output from ArcGIS Pro or server using the raster function that we have built. And once those objects are detected, you can easily convert them into vector points. And after that, if you want to take some action, if you want to send some inspectors, hey, that's really easy. You can use the field apps that we have that are automatically connected to those feature service to send inspectors. You can allocate tasks to those inspectors using Workforce. They can collect data using Survey 123 or Collective. These are out-of-the-box applications that we have. You don't really need to install or customize or develop customly any kind of applications. And the kind of data that they are going to collect once they go visit those areas, you can further analyze it using Insights, which is a self-service kind of BI geospatial data science platform. So this cycle of helping to prepare the data, interfacing with machine learning and deep learning actions, and help facilitating actions on top of them is something that through our platform we can facilitate. And we have seen a similar example with accidents. Again, we have used ArcGIS to prepare the training data and explore the data. We interface using the Python API with the machine learning engine to prepare the model. And once we have some sort of predictions, we want to take it to the next level by doing some sort of application. So we can optimize the ambulance placement using network analyst location allocation service, or we can use the iOS runtime to develop this kind of application quickly. So that was another object detection kind of thing. And think of it, if you want to take any kind of object, or like ships or cars, specific kind of buildings, solar panels. I have received lots of requests from customers. There is a ton of potential in the intel and defense space as well. And what you need really to do that is basically some sort of training data. If you have this kind of samples or images for those objects, recommended to start from at least 500 images or 1,000 images. We use 700 images in that point. Then you're generally good to go. I want to show you as well another interesting example that we have applied with lots of oil companies. Many oil companies are facing this problem of having missing rows. This is an example. There are lots of wells here. They want to reach them, but the road network layer is not complete. Only the yellow roads are registered right now. You can, by eye, know that these are roads, but they are not registered to the network, right? And that's a problem. They cannot send their vehicles there up front. I mean, they cannot plan for that because they don't have the road. They cannot do some sort of heavy operational planning, how to optimize the stops and the travel time and optimize the time and increase the productivity, because they don't have this data in the first place. So the idea is, how can we help them to complete the network? And that was something that we have started to implement based on the GPS data from those vehicles. So the vehicles of these oil companies go to those places and they generate GPS points. You can see it here, the screen is not that big, but this is not line. This is a sequence of points collected from all vehicles in that area across 1 year. And the question was, given this massive GPS data, can we use machine learning to detect the missing roads? Can we infer a set of connected polylines from GPS targets to form a complex road network layer? And after doing that, can we amend those added segments to the road network layer to have a complete road network layer? And the answer is yes. We have used density-based clustering, the kind of tool that we have seen at the beginning, to detect those clusters that are not falling on road links. And after doing that, we have used PCA, principal component analysis, which is a dimensionality reduction technique, to reduce this cluster to only one line. Sorry. That you're seeing here. This is the line output of the PCA. And then we use a technique called elastic maps. It's a type of neural networks that are not used for predicting, but for clustering, to perfectly fit that line to the sequence of GPS points. And as you can see, by time, it learns continuously until it reaches this kind of perfect alignment with the road. Now, it didn't cover that road at the beginning, but it's starting to learn it, right? This is mimicking the epochs. The epochs are the cycles of learning by this algorithm called elastic maps. And I want to show you maybe some more snapshots of that. So maybe ask yourself, why don't we just use an NEG processing function to connect the dots, right? The traditional methods that are used to connect the dots would not result in this kind of smooth experience. It's gonna be very zigzaggy. That's one thing. The other thing, the tool of reconstruct tracks, for example, that we have in our geoprocessing functions, don't work on minor roads. It works only on major roads, so it can connect those, but it would not connect those minor parts. So in order to cover the minor parts and the main parts and have a smooth kind of line on massive amounts of data, imagine that we're doing this across the whole US, for example, we use this kind of ensemble machine learning, a combination of machine learning methods, DBScan, PCA, and Elastic Maps, on the top of Spark, a big data infrastructure, to parallelize the inference and do this massively in limited amount of time. This is another example for that. Again, this is the output of the PCA. And through EPICS, we are simulating the training process. It's trying to learn the perfect alignment. Now, this is unsupervised learning, by the way. We don't teach the machine anything. I mean, we didn't spend time teaching the machine how to fit this. The idea of self-organizing maps or elastic maps that it's trying to fit perfectly, try to find the perfect clustering, in that case, the alignment of that line to those points automatically. As you can see, it's continuously adjusting until it reaches this kind of perfect alignment. We have deployed this kind of solution with different customers from multiple industries. One major customer in the field of self-driving cars, you want to have the most accurate road network layer, and we have helped them from the GPS points coming from their cars to automatically do that. A very big logistic government agency, they wanted to have the most complete road network layer across the US to help in the deliveries, and we are experimenting with lots of oil and gas companies because they face this kind of challenge of detecting roads. Now, maybe you ask yourself a question, what if we don't have this GPS data? What if there is someone who's interested in identifying those new roads, but we don't have a source for GPS data? And that's what we have done actually with convolutional neural networks again. So we have teached a type of convolutional neural networks called UNet. It's a specific kind of CNNs to recognize road features from imagery. So we gave it to images, right? So the idea is, let me bring more detailed version of that. So that's the kind of challenge. Maybe there are some roads that are not registered on the road network layer, and we want to convert, you can notice it by the eye, but we want to convert that automatically to a set of polylines. And that's the kind of experience we want to have. So we teach the machine by having different images for roads and the resulting polylines for areas that we have the polylines registered, right? And after a while, it started to learn the pattern. Whenever it sees a new road, how to deconstruct it and convert it to this. And that's the kind of output you're seeing here. We have applied that in some roads at Kuwait with one of our major customers called PASI. It's the kind of statistical and national mapping agency there, and we have applied that in some roads at Kuwait. Now we are currently experimenting with some utilities who are doing some development in some new areas that have really new roads that are not in the traditional road network layers, and they want to do the same. So we have seen how we are using unsupervised learning from GPS data to automatically find those roads, or another technique, a supervised learning technique called the UNet, to learn how that from historical data or images how to map row images to road center lines, and it has done that with new roads that it has seen. Now you can see that this is not the perfect kind of mapping, right? I mean, the roads are not that straight yet, and this we expect it to be fine-tuned with more training and more sample data. That's another interesting example that we have done at Washington DC. Again, deep learning is becoming really powerful with computer vision. So we have used a convolutional neural network and trained it how to recognize different objects like cars, large trucks, buses, motorcycles, pedestrians, and other objects directly from videos. And as you can see, it's really successfully classifying them, detecting them here. I think after a while, a pedestrian is going to pass here. And doing that on one single camera might be interesting, but doing that across every single camera in Washington, D.C., like we have extracted feeds from real-time analysis on 111 video cameras. So what you're seeing here is that we have combined the results from the convolution neural network to the operations dashboard using Python API. Again, Python API is centric to most of our work here. And you can see some components reflect the number of those objects and some other components reflect where it is on the map. Now, how this is seeing that from Omega level right now. So this is reflecting the where is the activity happening, the total number of cars, pedestrians, buses, and trucks. And maybe you start seeing some interesting patterns. So you can focus on any kind of intersection, click it here, and see the activity. And I want to show you something specific. That was an anomaly, actually, that we've seen that the relatively large number of pedestrians who are represented by the green color at this street on this day, which is not that usual. And seeing that on a map is generally definitely much more beneficial than seeing every feed from every camera. And by doing zoom in actually to those locations and seeing the live video feeds, we have discovered that was a specific kind of special day. I think it was St. Patrick Parades, something like that. And these are the people here dressed in green and walking. So it was not a demonstration, not a revolution, nothing. But yeah, again, another application of that is cross-matching the current behavior with historical behavior and automatically detecting abnormal events. Like these 3 points are experiencing abnormal increase or surge in the amount of cars at this point. This is not usual. So that's maybe something that is requiring some attention. So historically, we have used sensors from the roads to do this kind of traffic analysis, but seeing is different, right? I mean, we can train the machine to see anything, generally speaking. We can train it to see accidents, we can train it to see, I mean, I've seen some algorithms by IBM that are detecting, for example, illegal U-turns, or people doing some sort of suspicious behavior, like leaving a big bag in specific places at the airport suddenly, or any kind of other activity. Whenever you have examples to train the machine, it will be able to classify or detect those objects or those events after that. So applying this on a city-wide scale is definitely helpful here. When we combine the power of deep learning, in that case, detecting objects with spatial, so that we can see in space how things are happening in an abnormal fashion. That's another example that we are currently doing with subcities, the neighborhood stabilization kind of efforts. So some of the cities are using our app called Photo Survey. They collected like hundreds of thousands of photos for houses, and they manually try to label those photos whether this house has blight or overgrowth or graffiti or specific other phenomena. Now, you can imagine that this is a very time-consuming process, right? So we have used the Microsoft Custom Vision Service and trained it with some images on blight and overgrowth so that it automatically, with accuracy on average of 75%, classify every house, whether it has overgrowth or blight or any other thing. And let me show you a quick application of that. So as you can see here, these are all the houses with all the checks. These are the houses that has overgrowth or graffiti or boarded. And this is completely automated on hundreds of thousands. I think it was like 180,000 images. You can see where are the houses that has overgrowth or some of these phenomena and the probability score. You can check only for those who have like overgrowth only, etc. You can do some spatial analysis on it, do a heat map to see the concentration of this phenomena, etc. Again, maybe there is advancement happening in both directions separately. There is advancement happening at detecting objects. There is advancement happening in the spatial data science space, but getting those to work together produces new information products that were impossible before. I think we have extra 15 minutes, so I'm gonna skip some examples. That was another example that we have worked with Chesapeake Bay to achieve high resolution land classification. So we are traditionally using the machine learning algorithms that we have, like support vector machines, random trees, to classify land. But the challenge here is that the Chesapeake Bay had like 100,000 miles square of land. They have labeled this in like 18 months. They have used a mix between manual methods and some traditional machine learning methods, but it took them 18 months to label the 2 terabyte of data whether it's grass or impervious surface or water, etc. So obviously the results were outdated once that was happened, right? So we wanted a way to do this really quickly. And we thought about deep learning over GPUs because it's really efficient. And what we have done here is that we have trained the model on some of the manual data that the Chesapeake Bay has produced, the Chesapeake Conservancy, and it was able to detect with 91% accuracy and 16x faster. Like the total amount of time was like 150 hours versus 2,500 hours in manual labeling. And that is the kind of the result here. So this is the nape imagery at the upper left, and this is the existing land cover, and this is the AI classification. You can see that it's really matching the nape imagery in terms of the classified categories with four or five categories here. And this is happening on the fly. The secret here is basically the deep learning model that was used. It's called UNet. And the idea of scaling this through batch AI. So to do this across the 120,000 kilometers, we used a cluster of 148 GPUs in the cloud using the Data Science Virtual Machine, which is an offering that we are working right now with Microsoft. And lots of these applications that require intensive deep learning training and inference on wide scale need GPUs, lots of GPUs. And it's not feasible to do that on premise. So using cloud environments is generally a good option. That's another example of predicting the expected time of arrival. It's a really interesting example. Now, bless you. How many of you know about network analyst? Awesome. So as you know, network analyst is really helpful in routing applications and optimizing the sequence and stops. And it's helpful if you want to know right now when this car will arrive to that destination given the live traffic feed and the network topology that we have. But what if you want to predict at some point in the future, given the difference in and the seasonality in the data? I mean, definitely the arrival times are going to differ widely based on whether we are at summer or winter, the times of the day, maybe the driver behavior. Maybe there are specific kind of trucks that usually drive slower, right? Or specific kind of products that usually arrive slowly, etc. How can we capture this kind of seasonality? The answer is machine learning. So we have trained a model to recognize from historical origin, destination, and arrival data, mine the deep patterns in historical data, and try to predict accurately what's going to happen. And to do that, we simulated a training data. So using network analyst in the area of California and Nevada, we have produced 320 million data points, origin, destination, starting time, and total cost. 320 million examples. We wanted to train the model given any new, the first three, like the origin, destination, the starting time, it can predict with high accuracy what the arrival time is going to be, what's the total cost. And the results, as you can see here, are the traditional network analyst results versus the model results. Now the model is accurate like by 70 to 75%. We still have some work to do to increase it to 80 or hopefully 90%. But as you can see, it's really similar to the results of network analysts right now. And this is an example of the arrival time under 25 minutes from the center of downtown San Francisco to every other place in San Francisco during the different times of the day. As you can see, it's widely different based on multiple conditions like the traffic jams and the rush hours, etc. This is like where any car can reach from this location to other locations under 25, 20, 15, 10, and 5 minutes. The beautiful thing that I really like about that is that it's producing about 300,000 predictions per second, which is really large if you think about it. Now, to do this with the network analyst, it's going to take ages, or you're going to need like lots of cores, or you're going to need to store the origin destination matrix. Very big origin destination matrix for the whole city. Now, we are currently talking to some banks who are sometimes doing some analysis of the best locations to select their new branches, where the new branches should be, right? So in one of those planning meetings, they want to click on any point of the map and explore the arrival times from about 10,000 block groups to that point. If it's under like 15 minutes, that's generally good. If it's more, then this is not a good place. So to do that on the fly in an area like Los Angeles, for example, with I think we're talking about 10,000 blocks, it's gonna take ages to do this using Network Analyst or any different engine. But if you're using a similar engine, it's literally doing this under 0.3 seconds right now. So it's not only a matter of prediction, but it's a matter of performance because it's using GPUs and it's really fast with that. So with this, I think we have other examples to show, but I don't want to consume the whole session in showing the examples. I think the idea is obvious. I really want to know about your thoughts, your questions, and feedback about this. We are very passionate about this direction. We're investing time and resources in it. We're seeing big potential, and the potential we're seeing is not just in the prediction aspect or the classification aspect. It's about the whole story, right? It's about using GIS to explore the spatial temporal patterns, and then using it to prepare the data, and then interface with the deep learning and machine learning engines, in addition to the spatial machine learning algorithms that we have. And finally, after we do some sort of prediction or classification or reach some result, we want to take an action. We want to send inspectors. We want to do spatial analysis. We want, based on the complete road network layer, to start optimizing the operations and planning our supply chain. So it's an exploration, preparation, integration, prediction, and action life cycle that I cannot imagine would happen without a platform, a complete GIS platform to manage those pieces. So thank you so much for giving me time today. I was really excited to be with you today, and I'm happy to receive any questions that you might have.